Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention to small claims court. I've never wound up in small claims court, thankfully. Maybe you have. And if you have had an experience to share, or maybe you're going to have to go to one at some point here in your life and don't know what the heck to do and don't know your rights, I think this is going to be a good half hour for you because we got a couple of experts for you. Sarah Orr is one of them, director of the Law School's Consumer Law Clinic. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Larry.
Great to have you with us. And great to have Joshua Topo, a legal fellow and clinical instructor at the Consumer Law Clinic. And Joshua, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Larry.
As we talk with our two experts, I hope you'll join in. What do you want to know about small claims court? What experiences have you had there, maybe? Lots to talk about here. Give a call, the number 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org. Sarah, you've been doing this a while, 18 years, I think you've served as director of the UW Law School's Consumer Law Clinic. What's the mission of the clinic?
Thanks, Larry. The mission of the clinic is to provide students with practical experience in assisting clients and figuring out their professional identities before they graduate law school. And my particular clinic deals with consumer protection issues. And recently, we have really focused in on individuals who are dealing with consumer debt. So that's debt deriving from credit cards or from car loans or, small installment loans, and sort of by definition have trouble paying them back. So they become debtors. And so over the past 2 or 3 years, the Consumer Law Clinic has really targeted services to helping those individuals, many of whom are being sued in small claims court. And so that's where we're gaining more and more experience and helping the students understand how a court process works as they work with the clients.
Yeah. Joshua, and I think you're finishing off a 2-year fellowship at the center. What's your role there and how do you help people?
Yeah, that's correct. My path to working here at the Consumer Law Clinic is a little bit longer than just the 2 years. I was a student in the clinic myself when I attended law school at the University of Wisconsin. I've known Sarah for a really long time. So it was just a natural phase to help Sarah out in teaching the students and providing these services to the community. And so, my role is helping in the teaching of classes, supervising students. And one of the other larger parts that I've helped install in the clinic is a volunteering opportunity for our students, which is actually down at the Dane County Courthouse. It's the Small Claims Assistance Program. If you haven't heard of it, this is a program that's available for anybody looking to get assistance with small claims. They can go in on Tuesdays from 9 to 11:30, and it's staffed by volunteer Wisconsin attorneys. Spanish services are available on the first and third Tuesday of every month. But one of the things that I helped incorporate is that our students go down and volunteer, and I helped supervise them while they were down there to get that in-person experience helping people at the Dane County Courthouse.
You know, I was looking at the state guide. It says that small claims courts is a place where disputes are resolved more quickly and inexpensively than in other court proceedings. How accurate is that?
Yeah, I would say that's quite accurate. Yeah, I think it's cheaper, especially for pro se litigants. I think that's really the whole focus of the small claims court process. So pro se litigants are those who are going to represent themselves in court without an attorney. And there are still costs associated with the small claims court, filing fees. If you need to serve your paperwork on a defendant. So there are costs associated with, but generally there are forms available for people to use on the Wisconsin court website. They're easier to fill out, and the process moves a lot quicker than if you were not in small claims court, but in the what we call the large claims court. So, generally speaking, it is faster and less expensive, but there are still costs and time costs associated with that as well.
So the rules are the rules much different from other court proceedings?
Actually, the rules are designed to reflect the general court procedure if you're in a civil litigation in a civil court matter. However, there's one important rule that applies in non-small claims matters, but does not apply in small claims matters, and that is are the rules of evidence. So the rules of evidence do not apply in small claims matters. And so that means a person who needs to navigate this process without an attorney does not need to be aware of the legal rules of evidence in order to make sure that the commissioner hearing the case or the judge hearing the case can get a sense of what their story is. The rules of evidence can be quite complex. And, you know, can exclude information out of a court that a judge wouldn't hear because a rule might prohibit it. But in small claims court, those rules of evidence do not apply.
But I would expect that if you're going to small claims court, you need evidence of some sort. I would think you'd need, well, I suppose it depends on the claim.
Well, you do need evidence, and the evidence can be in the form of documents, which could be something, you know, on paper. It could also be, a photograph of a text message or a photograph of something. You also have to be prepared to provide testimony in telling your story. And so we always encourage people who are on either side of a small claims case to, sort of get their documents in order, try to write down what happened. Dates and particulars will be really helpful no matter where you're at in a small claims case, because the person deciding the case or hearing the case is going to want some details. So yes, you do have to have some evidence if you're seeking to pursue a claim against somebody else.
Are in a small claims case, are they typically handled almost like you'd, I guess, on the spot, so to speak? Like you go in and the day of the claim, it's over and done with by the time the evidence is presented that particular day?
I'll let Joshua answer this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the answer in this one is that it depends. For Dane County in particular, the return date, or this is the date that the court will set when, you know, the defendant needs to respond to the allegations in the complaint. And in Dane County specifically, that response only needs to be written. And so there isn't any in-person appearances needed at Dane County. And if you contest the lawsuit, then a new date is set for what's called a pretrial conference. And these are just conferences between the opposing parties and a commissioner to determine where are we at on this case? Are you guys trying to work something out to get a settlement or a dismissal or what's going on? Or do we want to proceed to trial? And so, but other courts may require in-person appearances. And sometimes at those in-person appearances, if the lawsuit is contested, they will hold the pretrial conference on the same date and an outcome could be determined. But it's important to note that as a defendant, if you don't contest the lawsuit in any way, whether or not an in-person appearance is required or a written answer is required, if you don't contest it, you will lose on what's called a default judgment. So the plaintiff will automatically win if the defendant does not participate by responding either in person or written, depending on what is required by the county that you live in.
And let's go over again the what are the typical cases that result in a small claims?
Yeah, so the four main cases in small claims would be a claim for money, and that currently encompasses lawsuits where the amount sought is $10,000 or less. It's important to note that that amount will be increasing as of January 1st, 2027 to $15,000, and it will continue to increase for an additional $5,000 every year until 2029. So those rules are changing, and this is new for the small claims court. The other types of cases would be a claim for a tort or personal injury. A lot of times these cases are could be like a car accident or, you know, a dispute between like property damage, other types of things where there's a personal injury or tort involved. And so currently those claims are limited to $5,000 or less, but they will also be increasing to $15,000 on January 1st, 2027. And then the last two types of cases would be a claim for an eviction. There's no monetary limits on those types of cases. And a claim for a replevin, which a replevin is a return of personal property, or, you know, you claiming that somebody has a piece of property that should be returned to you. And the value amounts for those will be increasing similarly to the torts and claims for money in January.
So return of personal property, what would be, I'm trying to think of, all right, so somebody, two people are together and then they break up and the one person wants the necklace back or the whatever it was back. Is that kind of the situation there?
Yeah, Larry, we've encountered those situations at the Small Claims Assistance Program. Also, situations involving pets. Someone has agreed to care for a pet for a certain amount of time. And when that time is over, the owner of the pet wants the pet back. And the person who is caring for it doesn't want to give the pet back. Yes, right? Yes. So these are great examples of some advice that we give to folks, no matter if they're seeking, you know, a claim for money or a tort, to see if you can work it out with the other party. Going into small claims court, there's still a process required. It does take some money to file actions and serve them on the other party. But also, your time is a big resource as well. And people need to think about how much time and energy and thought would be required to pursue an action in court. So that's one of our kind of preludes to helping somebody understand the court process and maybe know which forms to fill out. But we ask, you know, what have you done to try to resolve this?
Yeah, I would think. And oh man, if it came to Fido, what evidence could either party even present under those circumstances?
Well, you know, text messages are very common where people are communicating back and forth, or messages from, you know, social media apps where they're trying to resolve it, but maybe it's not getting resolved in that way. So those are the kinds of sort of records that might be involved in a situation like that.
Alice emailed to say her son is leaving a rental condo and the landlord lives in Germany. And what are his chances of getting his security deposit, maybe plus interest? So it sounds like the deposit hasn't been forthcoming and the guy lives in Germany.
Well, I don't think the chances are good at all.
To be honest, okay.
Yes. Our court system probably will not be helpful in getting that back, because getting jurisdiction over a person in Germany from Wisconsin will be extremely difficult. If the person isn't served with the papers from the court in the proper way, then they haven't officially been notified of a court action, and the court cannot make any rulings about that person or what they owe or do not owe. So I think that using the Wisconsin court system probably would not be fruitful.
Anne in Granton, Wisconsin has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Anne.
Good morning, Larry. Good afternoon. And yes, shortly before we were married, my husband sold his townhouse. And after we were married, he received a small claim notice. The water softener on the townhouse had failed within a year of purchase. And so the new owners were suing him for the cost of the water softener. And so I went to the small claims court with him. I was surprised to find out it was just someone's office. It wasn't actually a courtroom. And the judge or adjudicator, whatever their status was, said that they were sold the townhouse with existing equipment, and they would not be awarded a new cost of water softener.
Yeah. Is that a typical, and thanks a lot for calling, Anne. Is that typical or commonplace that you would not even go into the courtroom itself, but go to somebody, you know, office?
It varies from county to county, the physical environs where a small claims actions are heard. In populous counties, we do like Dane, Milwaukee, Marathon, there are court commissioners who have, actually in Dane County, they have kind of their own floor on the second floor of the courthouse that have smaller courtrooms than in the main building and the circuit court judges, courtrooms. But yeah, things are a little less formal. So it's not surprising that it's somebody's office. Also, in small claims actions, there is no court reporter like there would be in, and people might be familiar from TV or other media where they see a court reporter taking down what's happening in the courtroom. That doesn't happen in a small claims case. The commissioner or the judge who is hearing the case may be, you know, may wear a robe, may not wear a robe. It really varies from county to county.
Anne, thanks for calling. Ralph in Eau Claire, what's on your mind?
What's involved in a small claims court, a landscape company charged me $800 and didn't do the work. So I went to small claims court, and I'll say that it was very simple. Courts were helpful. We didn't have to appear. It was held by, I don't know what you call it, not a face-to-face, but online. Mm-hmm. So the person did not show up, so I guess I won. And that was for $800, but I haven't been paid. So my question to your guests are, how do I get paid?
Yeah. Somebody else has that issue too, but go ahead.
Yeah, I would say, I think one of the most misunderstood parts about small claims is that collecting on the judgment is much, much harder than it is to actually win a judgment. And it definitely depends on who you win the judgment against. There's only a couple of options that a person who wins a judgment against another person in small claims has to try to collect on a judgment, because there is no obligation for a person who has a judgment entered against them to actually pay it off. It does sit in on their record, but there are no negative repercussions for not making those payments except interest accruing on those balances. So there are a couple of ways that you can try to collect on a judgment. If you have a judgment against a, you know, an individual, you can garnish their wages. So in Wisconsin, you can have 20% of a person's disposable earnings withheld and sent to the person who obtained the judgment to help satisfy that judgment. But garnishments are a 13-week process here in the state of Wisconsin. And so after every 13 weeks, you would need to refile to continue to collect on it. There's non-earnings garnishments where you can try to seize a portion of somebody's bank account. But this is also a very difficult and I would say generally expensive process because it involves the person's banking institution into these cases, who now becomes a third party. There is also, you can try to seize some of their property. A sheriff could go out and take some of their physical property and sell it to try to pay back on that. But again, all of these kinds of options can be very difficult to proceed with. And there are still protections available for people, especially if you're trying to garnish somebody's wages, if they receive any type of public assistance or if their income is below the federal poverty level. They are completely exempt from garnishment. So it can be very difficult, and especially if you have a judgment against the company, you know, sometimes there just really isn't a way to collect on it. And unfortunately, it can be difficult. But these judgments do sit for 20 years. So you have 20 years after the judgment is obtained to try to collect on it. So it'll sit in the court system for 20 years. And that's kind of the time you have to try to figure out, how can I actually get this money from this person or company, whoever it is?
I read a little account of a guy he won a judgment, but then the guy said, well, I'm never going to pay you. And it went on for years and years and years. But then the guy wanted some, I don't know, needed a loan or needed some, and he could not get the loan because there was a judgment against him. And so it was like 10 years later, but he got he got paid.
Yes, that sounds correct.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. Oh man, we have other calls, but we're already out of time. Perhaps you guys could come back and be with us again. I know there are more questions out there than we've got time for. But I really appreciate Sarah and Joshua, you taking the time to be with us. And please do come back and be with us again, because there's more we can talk about for sure.
I'd be happy to.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Sarah Orr, boy, it flew by. Clinical professor, director of the UW Law School's Consumer Law Clinic. She teaches consumer protection and civil litigation. And Joshua Topol is attorney as well as a legal fellow and clinical instructor at the Consumer Law Clinic at the UW Law School. It's great to have them back, and we'll get them back down the road. Coming up, we're going to turn our attention to another industry that's doing really, really well here in Wisconsin. That's the golf industry, and you're going to learn a lot about financially how things are going in that industry. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.